From the sports desk of the Ames Tribune, Ames, Iowa, the home of the Cyclones. This is the Cyclone Slant. With sports editor Travis Hines. Now, the Cyclone Slant.
Hello and welcome to another Cy-Hawk Week edition of the Cyclone Slant podcast brought to you by Ames Ford Lincoln. I am Ames Tribune sports editor Travis Hines, joined with Dylan Montz. Just now, a little over, 48 hours away from kickoff of perhaps the most anticipated Cy-Hawk matchup ever. I would say certainly since maybe the rivalry renewed back in 1977 after a 40-year hiatus. Going to be a big one on Saturday. Game day's in town. Top 20 Hawkeyes are in town. Receiving votes, Iowa State is hosting.
Has a nice ring to it.
It's a big one.
It's huge. Yeah, and like we mentioned, I think even without the game day circus being in town, this would be pretty hyped up, just given what Iowa State's done the last couple of years and what Iowa's done over the last 20. It's a big one, and I think that kind of reflects all the different conversations you see on social media, and certainly kind of what the players have been saying, too. People are caring about this game.
Yeah, and I think this isn't necessarily a revolutionary idea, but I look at this for Iowa State as more of opportunity than referendum on where they are as a program or where they are as a team this year. If you go out and you beat Iowa, a top 20 team, a team that had a lot of preseason expectations, a team that, you know, clearly looked really solid through 2 weeks against, you know, under or overwhelmed opponents, that says a lot about you. If you lose, I think it maybe says something about you, but obviously there's still a ton of season left. So this isn't make or break. But if you lose, I think you feel like you really missed an opportunity, not only for the existential stuff about proving yourself worthy of game day, worthy of being a top 25 team, worthy of beating a rival for the first time in 5 years. But if you're as good as everyone thinks you are, and presumably you think you are, winning a game like this or losing a game like this is going to have a huge implication on where you end up at the end of December and maybe in early January. So it's a huge opportunity. Again, it's not a make or break game, but it'd be silly not to really explore the stakes here, which I think are high. They're not do or die, but they're very high stakes with a game with a lot on the line.
If you win, it kind of just changes maybe what your ceiling is or the complexion of what the season can be. If you lose, especially coming off the Northern Iowa game, there's probably some concern there.
Major doubt.
Yeah,
if they lose on in overtime or on a field goal at the end, like maybe not. But if you go out and you lose by 2 touchdowns, I think that enters a lot of doubt given what happened in UNI, that you're coming off a bye week. Like, how good is this team really? Which again, you can recover from, but you would obviously rather avoid that doubt creeping in either externally and certainly internally.
Yeah, I think it's just going to be, we will learn something about this team. It's not going to be like a Northern Iowa game where maybe there are things that are concerns, but we didn't really, I feel like, learn a lot. I think there's still a lot of questions. I think you'll learn something about what this Iowa State team is or isn't in this game. And that's not to say that's going to be what the whole season is, but I think it can maybe point you in the direction maybe of how things could go.
Yeah, I mean, I think we're going to learn not only big picture stuff, but I think we're going to learn maybe the more nitty-gritty details about position groups, about players. Like, and let's just start with probably the biggest one that Dylan wrote about today that you guys should all go read on amestrib.com about the offensive line. Like, that group is going to have to show what they've got when you're going up against a good Iowa defensive line anchored by a potential high first round draft pick in AJ Epineza. That if they go out and play poorly, they're going to get absolutely shredded. And that is not going to spell a victory for Iowa State, I would suspect.
This Iowa State offensive line played fine at times against Northern Iowa. Iowa is not Northern Iowa.
Well, and fine at times for an offensive line is bad.
Right. Yeah, I mean, so there's a lot of work to be done there, and they're most likely going to be playing without their center, who started 11 games last year, started the opener. And the big question is how this goes. I mean, how do they shuffle this line? Does Trevor Downing enter the lineup and play center? Does Julian Good-Jones swing in and play center? I don't think that happens, but I think there's a lot to figure out. Does Josh Knipfel have to swing out to tackle because of some of the concerns maybe that they had there in the last week where, you know, Northern Iowa was able to get pressure off the edge.
And Kniffel said today he's never played tackle in his life, even in high school or college.
And so he's a big dude. Never played tackle is, you know, and he'd worked there a little bit in the spring, but to have never done it in the game is...
it's a different kind of challenge and task.
Huge concern. So I think that's the matchup of the game. And, you know, people always talk about this game. It's always about the trenches. But I think really this is going to dictate if Iowa State can have success. Can that offensive line bow up, stop A.J. Epenesa? Can they block for Brock Purdy? Can they help get the run game going? It's all going to hinge on their ability to at least give the offense a little bit of time to get the skill position players going.
It'll be interesting to see how Iowa State addresses what appears to be a disparity for them to be a disadvantage. Do they just hope and pray that those guys figure it out? Do they keep in an extra tight end? Do they keep in a running back? Do they mix in more misdirection? I think we'll learn early on what they think about their offensive line, because if they go out and just try to do five to protect Purdy, or they just go run off tackle, then I think that they think higher of their offensive line than maybe you and I do right now. If we see some traps and we see some misdirection and lots of play action, then I think they will have, I think it's safe to assume that they have the same evaluation of their offensive line as we do. And are those not gimmicks, but adjustments that you make, is that going to be enough to offset that perceived disadvantage without giving up your ability to run your offense smoothly and efficiently?
And I think this is probably the time where you see more Brock Purdy designed runs too. I think that's another dynamic. Obviously, we didn't see in the UNI game that has to be probably he has to get involved in that way to open things up. Otherwise, if you know, we saw him just sit back there in the pocket, and I think he will do that at times, but the offensive line is going to be coming for him, and the defensive line from Iowa, excuse me, is going to be coming for him in a big way.
Campbell was weirdly defensive about questions about why didn't Brock Purdy run against you and I. And I don't know if it was because he's annoyed that we're asking questions about a small sample size because they don't want Purdy to run, or just because he's annoyed because we ask questions repeatedly.
Yeah, I think that was one, since he had heard it a few times, maybe that kind of ruffled his feathers for whatever reason. But it's valid because of what Purdy was able to do the last year.
And you have a new offensive coordinator.
You have a new offensive coordinator, even though he had been on staff previously. But Purdy, he was asked about it in the media scrum outside and outside the press conference room, and he said that he had been asked by family members, he'd been asked by kids on campus why he wasn't running, asked if he was okay, and he goes, yeah, I'm fine, it's just more about situational football, which is kind of in the vein of what Matt Campbell likes to talk about. So I think that was an attempt probably for Iowa State to be vanilla and not try to get too out there, but also part of really kind of making Brock Purdy true quarterback, as Matt Campbell likes to say.
Yeah, part of me thinks we're going to see less running. Part of me agrees that it was a purposely vanilla playbook, so I don't really know what to make. I just usually when a coach gets defensive, my radar picks up about, okay, what's the reason here? And I think we'll get an idea about that on Saturday. I mean, it could very well be that they knew going into this Iowa game that their offensive line was going to have a major task ahead, so you keep that in your back pocket as a wrinkle, as a curveball to throw at Iowa to, you know, help those guys out up front. Like, maybe that's the most obvious and realistic explanation for 2 weeks ago, but I think we're going to find out on Saturday.
Huge. Yeah, it's, you know, like we mentioned, A.J. Epenesa, 6'6", 280. Even if he's not in the backfield making a play, he's a guy that's just a disruptor.
You got to double team him. I mean,
he's kind of like Ray Lima a little bit, because Ray Lima, you know, Epenesa has put up a few stats this year. I think he's had four hurries, but he's not getting, you know, four or five sacks a game or anything crazy like that. I mean, he's just a guy that can kind of affect everything you want to do. So, you know, do they use Dylan Sainer to chip him a little bit more? Do they throw running backs back there to help out? Just how Iowa State adjusts to give the offensive line reinforcements is, like I mentioned, going to be a huge key in the game.
Before we flip over to the other side of the ball, what are the other issues, challenges, or maybe advantages that you think Iowa State looks to address on Saturday offensively?
I think it's probably fair to say that Deshante Jones isn't going to get as targeted as he was in the opener, since that I think that was the first time he'd been that an Iowa State receiver had been targeted that much since the early 80s. So I think they'll try to spread it around a little bit more. And there were some drops at times from some of the other guys. I know Tariq Milton had a couple opportunities to go out and make plays, and the tight ends were involved. So I think there will probably be a little bit more of a focus to from Purdy to not maybe automatically go to the check down, but just to look a little bit more downfield and open it up in that way, because I think that could be a place that Iowa State was a little bit more vanilla as well. So just getting those guys involved, I think, is going to be big, because that's probably the most suspect part of the Iowa defense is the secondary.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I mean, you know, because Iowa is loath to give up big plays. Does Iowa State try to push the envelope there, or do they take stuff over the middle and hope, you know, one of their receivers can break a tackle, or maybe just keep moving the chains and hope that they avoid the penalties and the miscues that they had against Northern Iowa that just kill drives when you have to be methodical and you know, eat up the field, you know, in 6 to 10 yard chunks.
And that's the thing too, is the penalties. And you know, not to excuse them, but they can't happen. But some of them seem fluky. Like the Josh Knipfel thing, sure, is fluky. The Johnny Lang blindside block. You know, that's probably not going to happen all the time either. So you take a couple of those. Maybe Iowa State gets touchdowns on those drives, and it changes, you know, ultimately kind of the way that game flows. So, it's something they have to clean up, but also something that is easily able to be cleaned up.
Yeah, I mean, to me, the other issue too is, can one of those running backs have some success? Because if they can't, and Iowa State gets one-dimensional, like, then it's they're teeing off on Brock Purdy with that pass rush. And I don't know which of the 4/5 guys I expect to see the most. I would guess Crony, but then you have the late fumble, which didn't help his cause against UNI. So I don't know. And then, you know, Nwangu, obviously, they're saying he's going to play, but is dealing with a hamstring.
He had a hamstring, and then shoulder. On the film, it looked like a shoulder. Yeah. So a couple of different things.
So we'll see. I mean, I think, you know, that'll be potentially where the game is won or lost for Iowa State, is going to be their offense. I think that's not exactly a Vince Lombardi level analysis, but I think it's still true. So let's go to the other side. If I'm John Haycock, I don't have a ton of concerns about my defense against Iowa's offense.
Yeah, I mean, the Iowa offensive line is traditionally strong. They have Tristan Wirfs and Alaric Jackson. It sounds like he might not play, but they have big guys up front. Tyler Linderbaum is a redshirt freshman center who played really well in the last game. So, you know, the thing for Iowa State is, can they get pressure up front? Can they kind of affect Nate Stanley because he's not a runner? Can you really kind of find the mismatches with that offensive line, or maybe open things up for Orion Vance to come in and create some pressure too? So that up front and affecting Stanley is going to be the biggest thing. But again, there's not as many concerns there maybe as there is for, you know, the flip side of the ball like we talked about.
Yeah, I mean, I think it'll be really interesting to see how Iowa handles those linebackers for Iowa State, because if those guys are able to wreak havoc, then they're going to have a long day offensively if you're Iowa. I think you have to figure out a way to contain those linebackers without giving stuff up to that front, because obviously that with Bailey and with Lima and across the line, like, those guys are capable of really causing problems. But if you spend all your resources on them, you're opening yourselves up to those linebackers who are obviously really capable, talented players and playmakers, I think, that we've seen, you know, certainly from Rose last year and Vance against Northern Iowa. So that'll be an interesting way to see, or an interesting thing to watch, to see how Brian Ferentz tries to game plan and call plays around that.
John Haycock was talking about it the other day, that Iowa doesn't run a lot of RPOs. So are they going to set up passes that look like runs and vice versa? How quickly can Nate Stanley get the ball out to those receivers? Because, you know, Matt Campbell's mentioned a couple times, that's probably the biggest change with the Iowa offense from last year or 2 years ago, is how deep that receiver pool is and how skilled those guys are. I think he called the guys on the outside the most skilled at that position that he's played against Iowa since he's been here, which is only 3 years, but still I think there's marked improvement there. So how can Iowa State kind of you know, get to the quarterback quick and use its secondary to kind of create pressure on those guys at the line as well?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to Saturday, because I think it's such it's an even matchup between two good teams. I don't expect miscues or turnovers to really be the driving force. I think I'm predicting a pretty clean football game on Saturday, and it's just really going to come down to, you know, either who can make a play or two or who can execute the most consistently.
And clean, and I think it'll be low scoring too. I think it's going to be a little bit of a slugfest.
Not the, what was it, 9-6 or 6-3 game? What was that?
Yeah, hopefully not 9-6 again. And I don't think it'll be the 44-41 a couple years ago either. It'll be somewhere in the middle.
All right, should we go to Twitter questions or anything else?
I like Twitter questions.
Tim Day asks, who do you think is the best faculty athletics representative in the Big 12? I have one answer for that, and it's Tim Day. But I don't know if I need to disclose it. Tim might be the only faculty athletics representative I know in the Big 12.
Well, even if he is, I'd say he's the best.
Chad Struthers asks, will you be in the pit for game day? The way they got media set up, they're not in the pit. I believe we're located out in a bullpen. Dylan will be there with our photographer, Nirmal, basically observing. I don't think there's a lot of mingling going on. But you looking forward to that, Dylan?
Yeah, it'll be cool to see it kind of up close and personal. And again, it's hard to tell, at least right now, without seeing the setup, how much we'll be able to see the stage. But being there and hopefully kind of maybe getting the sense of the energy a little bit, it'll be a cool experience.
Yeah, usually this is something that doesn't move the needle a lot for me, but I think it's undeniable that this is going to be a unique experience and a potentially what it's literally a once in a 25-year experience for Iowa State, because they've been around since, what, 95, and this is their first time they're getting game day. So, you know, I encourage everybody to make the most of it and experience it, because it is – it's a cool experience. It's a cool accolade for a program that obviously has just been building towards this for a long time.
It's easy for people to probably downplay it because it's not something that's...
It's a TV show.
It's a TV show, and it's not something necessarily tangible, but it does mean something, the visibility certainly for the university, but also it is a sense of validation, I think, for the program.
T-Holm asks, are you ready for hoops? Man, I need a hoops break after Team USA's FIBA absolute debacle over the last week.
Brutal.
Man, I mean, I know nobody was playing, but you just hate to see Team USA take it on the chin like they did over, I don't even know where they were playing.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. Was it Serbia last night?
Yeah. And like, I saw Windhorse wrote about it. I haven't read it yet, but I saw his tweet that like Serbia didn't even like celebrate. Like, so beating at least this American team is not cause for like running around and screaming, and which typically it is because America is so dominant in the sport. But so yeah, I'm a little bummed out. So maybe that makes me more ready for hoops to get that taste out of my mouth. And it'll be interesting to see, does Team USA, Jerry Colangelo at all, just welcome all the stars back in full force for the Olympics in Tokyo? The answer to that is yes, but will they want their pound of flesh from those guys, at least some of them, for, you know, I mean, this is a embarrassing result for Team USA basketball. I don't know if it was an embarrassment for that team, because obviously like the talent level was not the best that America can put forward. So I think those guys, you know, did their best. This to me is not like the what would that have been, the 04 team that just went out there with talented guys and embarrassed themselves because they just played bad basketball in Athens. So it'll be interesting to see how Team USA handles this. Hopefully it just all the stars come back and they take gold. It's the one place where I'll own my fandom is American basketball.
You got it, USA, baby. Jerry Colangelo is not one to hold grudges, though, right? So he can...
Yeah, if you stay in basketball as long as Jerry Colangelo has, like, basically, you have all the grudges or no grudges.
Exactly.
Tom Drake. Which mascot head is Corso picking up at the end of game day?
I don't know. I've thought about this a little bit this week, which is incredible to say that I've thought about it at all. But I think every once in a while he likes to rile up the fans and pick the opposing team. I think he'll pick Iowa.
You think he'll pick Iowa? Who is Dylan Montz picking?
I think I'm leaning Iowa too. The offensive line stuff for Iowa State again is concerning, and until that I see them actually go out and do it in a big way, I'm gonna have to lean that Iowa way because of it.
Who did you pick in the preseason? I don't remember.
I picked Iowa State.
Yeah, so I picked Iowa State in the preseason. I'm gonna stay with Iowa State, but my degree of confidence in that pick has waned significantly. Both because that first go-round for Iowa State against UNI was lackluster, to probably downplay it a little bit, and I think Iowa's played well in their two games. So I'm going to narrowly pick Iowa State, but not feeling super confident about it. Colin Greens, if Iowa and Iowa State swap schedules for the first two games, would the spread be different for Saturday's game, which is now, what, 2.5 for Iowa?
Yeah, I even saw it bump up to 3 at some places, so...
Potentially. I mean, Iowa State, we just don't know much about them, which I think is fueling that line because they played an FCS team pretty mediocrely, and then they sat out a week. So there's not a lot to know about Iowa State right now.
Yeah, obviously, you know, Rutgers isn't good. Miami, Ohio is probably better than Rutgers, but Iowa handled them. You know, it took a little bit against Miami, Ohio, but they ended up running away, and Rutgers was never a concern. So there's probably more known, you know, qualities about Iowa right now. But, you know, it's hard to say. It's hard to play the hypothetical game.
Clone Teach wants to know, what's going to be the closer margin of victory or loss, Cy-Hawk football or Cy-Hawk men's basketball?
The closer one?
Yeah, which game will have a closer margin of victory for whoever wins?
I think it'll be football.
Yeah, me too. I think Iowa basketball is going to have a tough time of things this year with no Bohannon, with Moss transferring. That's they could be in for it this year. And assuming Iowa State gets Rashear Bolton, which I don't have an update on, I keep getting told any day now by a lot of different people. And I think Iowa State's now just resolved to just anytime you ask them to say in a week or two, and they've been saying that for a couple months.
The standard, it was supposed to be the beginning of August, and now it's here, almost mid-September.
And I think that their frustration is starting to bubble a little bit with this whole situation, which how could it not?
I get it.
With how long this is going, but the longer this goes on, the less patience people have. But so I don't have an update, but assuming he is eligible, which seems to be the prevailing wisdom still, the frustration with this is the timing, not that they've lost confidence in him getting his eligibility, at least that I've detected by talking to people. So assuming he's eligible, I think Iowa State could be good to pretty good. So I think that'll be a more lopsided game. Blair Billings, more targets for Deshaunte Jones or carries for Johnny Lang on Saturday?
I was already on record as saying I think Deshaunte Jones' targets will be down. I think I'm still leaning Johnny Lang to get the first carries in the game, so I'm gonna lean that way even if it's just narrowly.
I'm going with Deshaunte Jones. I mean, he's not gonna get the 16.
It was 16 targets, 14 catches.
It wouldn't shock me if he had 8 or 9 or 10 targets on Saturday, and I'm not sure Johnny Lang gets that number with the way what we saw from Crony, assuming Kane is healthy. And then certainly Breece Hall being in the mix too.
Yeah, I don't know.
But that's a good question. It's a nice little betting line there.
It's a tough one. I don't know if I see as many carries from Crony. You know, even though he played fine later on in the game, I think, you know, they started with Johnny Lang and Breece Hall for a reason. And even if those two
and Kane above him too,
and Kane a little bit. So I don't know. I probably lean that way, but it's a good question, and I think pretty close.
All right, we got anything else we got to hit on? It's Cy-Hawk week. I think we about covered everything. It's going to be pretty crazy. I would say everybody get here early, but not too early and make traffic terrible for us. So, you know, take your time, show up after like 10 or 11.
That's all we're worried about.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a buzz around town and around Jack Trice Stadium, rarely seen, I think. And if Iowa State wins, it kind of sets up that maybe you do see it again in a couple months when Texas comes to town. Because I think if Iowa State wins on Saturday, it's an indication that they're closer to the team than that we thought they might be coming into the year than the team that we saw against Northern Iowa 2 weeks ago.
Yeah, I think it's probably more buzz around a game that I've covered even a little bit more than TCU or West Virginia from the last couple of years. It's just the added components to it. But like I mentioned, I think this is a game where we learn a lot about this Iowa State team as opposed to what the opener was, even against a good Northern Iowa team.
All right, that'll do it for us. Please check out all our stuff. I think you'll enjoy it on AmesTrib.com. We appreciate you listening to this podcast. Have fun on Saturday. Be safe. This has been the Cyclone Slant Podcast brought to you by Ames Ford Lincoln. I'm Travis Hines. He's Dylan Muntz. We'll catch you next time.